Good morning, and thank you for joining me for Sunday Sunrise, a public affairs show produced locally by Entercom Phoenix. I'm Minnie Salas, your host, and this morning I'm joined by Dr. Charles Finch, who is the founder of Camp Paz and honorary board member of Stepping Stones of Hope. He's also the camp director for the weekend camp program for kids with Stepping Stones of Hope, which he'll tell us more about this morning. Diane Radin is the board president of the organization, and we're talking about something that we will all eventually go through, the loss of a loved one and how to deal with the grief that comes with it. So, Dr. Finch, tell me first, what is Stepping Stones of Hope?
Well, Stepping Stones of Hope is a grief support organization. We were founded in 1999. This was an organization that started as a weekend camp program for kids. And since then, it's grown into an eight-program service for the community, looking at grief support and serving kids, adults, families, as well as the entire community.
So at some point, you saw that there was a need for this. Tell me how that got started and how you became interested in this.
Well, you know, I practice as an emergency physician. I'm a board-certified emergency physician. I've been in practice now for just over 21 years. When I was in medical school in the early 90s, I was exposed to a one-hour lecture in my medical school curriculum on the topic of death and grief. And as a physician, I deal with that quite often, almost daily in the emergency department, when I have a patient and families coming in who have either suffered from or have died. And it's interesting, back in the early 90s, there was a limited amount of information out there on how do we support families after they've had a death in their life, and most importantly as well, how do we even support kids who've experienced a death in their life?
Mm-hmm. So it started with supporting children then?
So it started with the kids, and I really felt that it was important because we as adults grieve after a death, and oftentimes we forget that the children, many times, whether it's our kids or maybe it's grandkids or maybe it's friends that have had children themselves, how do they grieve? We all grieve differently, but we all do grieve. And I think it's important for us to be able to support the kids as well as the adults. But back in the 90s, when I initially started the first Camp Paz weekend program for kids, the focus there was on the kids. Being able to allow them to grieve, being able to allow them to see that it is okay to feel the way they're feeling, mm-hmm. and to provide them the environment to be with other children who are grieving as well, who've experienced a death in their life.
Yeah.
And so they can realize, number one, it is okay to feel the way they're feeling. And number two, they're not going through this alone. There are other children as well that are grieving, and how can we bring them together in an environment that is fun, is safe, and provides them that avenue to allow them to grieve in their each individual way that they may have.
Yeah.
So that's really what it started with back in 1999.
Well, now you have programs for adults as well, right? And families together?
It's interesting because after we started our weekend camp program in 1999, we offered a twice a year program where we brought children together in a camp experience. So I took them out of their immediate environment and brought them to this camp experience. And what we realized after we did about a year and a half of weekend camp experiences for children, the adults needed it as well. And so then we began in 2002, we began a weekend program for adults. And it was in the same camp environment that we had for our children, but it was separate. So we brought the kids to one side of the camp, and we brought the adults to the other side of the camp. Now, when I say the adults, many of these adults were parents, but not all. Mm-hmm. Some were grandparents, some were foster parents, some were just friends. But the commonality is that everyone experienced a death in their life.
So before we go in further into how these camps work and what it is that these families experience during that time, I want to bring you into the conversation, Diane. Tell me how it is that you got involved with the organization.
Well, let's see. I started like 30 years ago, and I was just felt a need to get trained in the area of grief. And so I started with actually a New Song Center and took my training through them. And I got so involved that I went to my financial planner and I said, when I retire, I want to start a grief and wellness center. And so put some money aside in my, you know, in my retirement package for that purpose. And so I retired in 2003, And in that year, I retired in February, and in March, I went to a workshop. And there was the executive director of Stepping Stones was at that workshop. And I said, you know, I listened to what she was telling about the organization. And I said, do you ever need volunteers? And she said, we always need volunteers. So I volunteered for the organization and just fell in love with it. And I think it was 6 months later, I became board president. Mm-hmm. And I've been in that role ever since. And I actually administrate the office. And we have a part-time employee. But we have an office and we're incorporated and we're actually up and running, and we have expanded so much since that time that it's pretty exciting. We have programs for just about everyone, you know, all ages, and people come in from different places in the country. There are not a lot of these bereavement weekends. There are, you know, support groups, mm-hmm. but not weekend programs, not a whole lot of them.
What makes it different from a support group, for example, spending an entire weekend with other people that are going through the same thing?
I think the opportunity that we allow both for children and for adults and for families to be together for over 24 hours. Many of our programs are about 36 hours in length. So when we say a weekend program, oftentimes it may start either on Friday night and end on Sunday morning, or it may start early Saturday and then late Sunday afternoon. And the opportunity for the length of time in an environment that's outside of the home, outside of a classroom, outside of a school or workplace, and providing the environment that we provide allows for tremendous healing and growth to occur for all of our participants, whether they're children or adults.
So when someone that has just lost a loved one comes to you, is it usually immediately after they've lost someone, or is it months later, could be years later?
You know, it's funny how that has changed over time. Because when I started training and in 2003, the mindset was, you know, wait 6 months, you know, that don't have anybody do any kind of healing process before 6 months because they're not ready for it. And as we've changed, or, you know, as the culture has changed, we live in an instant society now. We want it fixed now. So I don't remember exactly what year that started, but I started hearing people say, well, I want to come now. And I thought to myself, who am I to tell them that they're not ready to deal with their grief? And so we have people sometimes that are a month out from the actual loss, and they come and they get started. And, you know, I don't really see any difference between that and what it was like when they waited 6 months. Mm. Especially for kids, they get a head start on getting some coping tools that they don't go into adverse behaviors.
I would say on the contrary as well, people who have had deaths that have been 5, 10, sometimes even 15 years in the past, come to our programs and realize, boy, over this period of time, I still do remember who it was who died in my life. And I can get through this process, and I'm being provided different coping techniques and methods to get through this journey a lot easier. And it didn't have to be just 2 or 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Even 5, 10, 15 years ago have been meaningful as well. So I'm not necessarily certain what that right answer is, but clearly the opportunity to be provided the avenue is needed.
So obviously a lot of the people that come to you are at different stages in their grieving process. Tell me what the stages are.
You know what, I kind of laugh at the word stages, because Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was the initiator of that, and she spent a lot of her life near the end of her life trying to dispel that myth. Mm-hmm. Because there are different emotions that we go through. But what Kubler-Ross was really talking about, she was a hospice nurse, and she had stages of grief for dying. And she would talk about the different stages that a person goes through when they're dying. It's not necessarily after the death, because after the death, I personally, in my own personal experience, it's a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Some days you're this way, some days you're another way, and it's just the way it is. And it's not like, okay, I finished being angry now.
Yeah.
No, you go back and you get angry again, and it's okay. And I think it's important that people understand that, because they feel like when they're going back and redoing a stage, if you will, that they're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a while. And the word acceptance is, I think that's so, it's an interesting word because you think you're finished with it. And frankly, this week was the week that my dad died. And he died 10 years ago. And I went through a slump on Saturday. It was the day he died. But I understand that it's like, it's not painful like it was in the beginning. But you do go back and review those feelings, and it's okay.
So I assume this is something also that you cover in the camps that you have. Do you find that it's easier for the adults or for the children to accept that wherever they are is okay?
From a child's perspective, oftentimes they're forgotten in the process. So to answer your question, I would say they have just as much of a easy time accepting as well as a difficult time, as similar to the adults. And so they just may be coming at it in a little bit of a different perspective from their developmental stage. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that oftentimes the kids may just look like they're doing just fine. And parents and family members may call us and say, you know, we're having some issues from a standpoint of adult being an adult, but our children are actually doing okay. They're playing, they seem to be interacting, mm-hmm. and they seem to be doing just fine. Well, in reality, those children really do need to have some opportunity to express their own grief in their own way. And because on the outside it may look like they're doing okay, but on the inside there's some challenges. And so we want to try to break through those challenges and allow an opportunity, because it's not wrong. It's just part of that grieving process. And so how can we actually allow that to occur? And that's what we try to focus on in our programs, both on the adult side as well as the children's side.
My guests this morning are here with Stepping Stones of Hope. Diane Radin is the board president, and Dr. Charles Finch is the founder of Camp Pause and honorary board member of Stepping Stones of Hope. He's also the camp director for the weekend camp program for kids. So what's the website address for the organization?
It's www.steppingstones, it's plural, steppingstonesofhope.org.
And this is where you have information on all the programs that you have available. Is there a fee to participate in the camps?
So we ask for a donation. And it's a $50 donation for participating per individual in each of our programs, per program. And we do have scholarships that are available, so we certainly don't turn anybody away. We want them to participate, but we do, you know, certainly offer opportunities for a cost reduction if needed.
So how do the workshops work? And I was kind of reading a little bit on the website about this, how the family members are all separated into appropriate groups. Tell me how you decide how those groups look.
So from a kid's perspective, you know, and again, when we look at each of our programs, from our weekend Camp Pause program, we actually offer that opportunity for children and adults to come to a camp experience. We separate them into separate groups, adults and kids, on each side. So they're actually participating separately during the weekend camp. And then at the end of the weekend, we bring the adults and families together in more of a family ceremony. From a kid's perspective, we break them up into age-specific groups. So typically speaking, you know, 6 to 8-year-olds, 9 to 10-year-olds, 10 to 12-year-olds, and then we have a teen group. Adults, we typically have them together, and we split them up accordingly.
Does it make a difference how a loved one was lost, what the circumstances were?
So I think it makes a difference in explaining to the children sometimes how different people can have different types of deaths. Mm-hmm. Some can be medical, some can be traumatic, some still are somewhat unknown. So I think we try to be as honest, as upfront, and as unique as we can to provide that opportunity of understanding and also support, because that's truly what we do, is support. Mm-hmm. We're not providing therapy, we're providing support. But it is therapeutic support. And although I have to be careful by saying therapy, because truly that's not what we are. We are a support-based organization. And so we try to allow these children to best understand how it was before the death, what happened during the death, as much as we possibly can, and then most importantly, how do we move forward in the future to actually allow them to maneuver through their grief journey as easy as we can. And that's from the kids' side. And Diane, maybe you can talk about the adult side as well.
Well, I think it kind of goes the same. It's the same process. Sometimes with the adults, the way we split them up, sometimes it's by circumstance. So if there's suicide, especially when there's a suicide, people respond to that in different ways. And so to have two people who have experienced someone completing suicide in the same group is helpful because they can tell each other, you know, they bond that way because they work together in small groups. They work together in large group also. But sometimes it helps to have the same circumstance. Sometimes we try to group them by these people lost their husbands or these people had sibling deaths or children die. So it all depends how it falls out and who signs up.
Oftentimes we've had children come to camp and they've had a dad die of a heart attack, let's say. And until they arrived to camp, they didn't realize that they're not alone. There's other kids, even at our camp, who've had a dad die, and they may have died also of a heart attack. Well, how much more do we want than that? I mean, that really does uniquely identify that, you know what, they're not alone, and it is okay to feel the way they're feeling because, you know what, his dad died as well. And not only did his dad die, he died of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And so we really think it's important to try to see if we can not only pair up our children with unique types of deaths, but similar types of deaths as well.
Do you follow up with the families after they come to the camps, or do you hear of them? Do they come back to participate in other programs?
You know, pretty typically, there's a camp just about every other month, sometimes even more often than that. And so there's an opportunity for them to come back and not redo the same camp, but do a camp that is totally different than the one that they just participated in. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we started was, we call it First Steps, and it's a monthly support group, and that's exactly why it was created, so that we could get support for those families on a monthly basis. If they felt like they went to camp and then there was nothing, they could come to support group. And we're finding that more and more now that there's almost as many coming for support group. And when we work in support group in that First Steps program, we work with the families all together, which is very powerful. And because of that fact, we have even started this new camp that will be going the end of July, where we're going to move the families together and actually have them work together. So we're trying a little experiment to see how that's going to work out. And so we have a real variety of programs.
From a grassroots perspective, we can look at the opportunity of saying in 99, we started with a weekend camp program for kids. In 2002, we then added the adult section to that weekend camp program at Camp Paws. And once we became fully incorporated in 2003 and knew that we were going to grow this organization because of the need, we can look at the opportunities, as Diane just mentioned, that there's each program that we add not only is unique, but it's a need. And we've added a weekend program for teens. We've added a weekend program for adults. We have added a weekend program for families. And as Diane just mentioned, we're adding a very unique program now, starting this at the end of this month as well, that's looking at the family unit as well in a slightly different way than our previous weekend program for families as well. Each program, though, offers that unique aspect where we can actually move through this process of grief easier, and it's not repeating itself for these families that may be participating in our various programs.
Yeah, because they're all at different levels, right? They're all going through it differently. So this might be a difficult question to answer, but what's the biggest challenge you find from someone who has just recently lost someone and someone who's lost someone maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
You know, I don't really think that it makes too much of a difference, because what comes to my mind is this gentleman that called me from the Mideast or Midwestern part of the country. And he said, if I send my wife, can she go through your program? He was like, really, like, I want to send my wife. I want to get her fixed. And I could hear that in him. And I said, you know, yes, if she's willing to come to camp, we certainly would, you know, have her be able to attend the camp. He said, well, I'm sending her. It's been 15 years since our son died, and she's still not over it. And that woman came to camp. She, I can't remember the state but traveled quite a ways, rented a car, drove to the campsite and everything, and she just couldn't thank us enough. Whatever we did at that camp, whatever the program was, it satisfied some kind of need in her. And so it's difficult to answer that question because everybody comes with their own baggage. And we know that unresolved grief is what creates juvenile delinquents. It's the people that are on death row. Huge percentage of those people just get in trouble because it's unresolved. Because a lot of times, and as Dr. Finch was saying before, children don't always know. They know that they're angry, that they don't understand that it's coming because of grief. Mm-hmm. And so just getting tools for handling their anger is not only tools for grief, but it's anytime you get angry, this is some of the things you can do. Breathe. Just breathe. And when children grab on to those coping skills, they're life skills. They do that the rest of their life to cope with things.
I'm speaking with Diane Radin, who is the board president for Stepping Stones of Hope, and Dr. Charles Finch, who is the founder of Camp PAWS, honorary board member of Stepping Stones of Hope, and the camp director for the weekend camp program for kids. And earlier, when you said that children don't know, sometimes, you know, they know that they're angry, but they maybe don't know why. I'm sure adults probably experience the same thing, too.
I can certainly say that, you know, it's challenging enough from a standpoint of having a death. I've experienced it both with my mom and dad. That's after I started this program. You know, I've since had both my mom and dad die. And again, when someone's had a death in their life, it turns the family upside down. And so the adults have a hard enough time trying to figure out how to just get through their daily living, you know, taking care of the checkbook, taking care of the other kids that are in the family, depending on the type of death and who died. How do we keep that family unit together, structured, and moving forward? And that's a huge challenge for adults, let alone the children. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen over the years, oftentimes, these older children that may come to camp, sometimes the teens that may have other siblings, sometimes they'll take on that adult role. They feel like it's their responsibility at times to serve as maybe a mom or a dad, depending on the type of death, and without the skills and the mechanisms that are set up. And so we try to work through, not only with the kids, but also with the adults, you know, very effective coping mechanisms that will allow for these children and adults to move forward.
Is there anything that you have in the works? You talked a little bit about the evolution, basically, of the organization since it first started, but is there anything you see in the future that you want to implement that you just haven't had an opportunity to do yet?
I think this camp coming up in July is probably one of the ones that I've thought about. It actually is going to incorporate photography. So we're working with another organization. So we're partnering with another nonprofit, and it's experimental. I mean, it's like I've seen some programs across the country where they are working with photography. So we'll see how that works out. There's one other program that I'd love to start. I don't know if this might be the first time the board is hearing this. I'd like to start a program for caregivers. I saw what happened to my sister when my mom and dad needed that constant caregiving, and her personality changed. It's hard on caregivers. So I would love to provide, even if it's just a one overnight or one day program, just to give them a respite that they could come and experience just something for them. Otherwise, we're going about every month, pretty much. So not too much room for new innovation.
Although I would say, too, from a medical perspective, we're really looking at opportunities to improve how we deal with this process of death, not only in the emergency department in my setting, but even throughout the hospital settings, looking at what hospitals have available from a grief packet perspective. What's important in those packets? What do families truly need? The hospitals may think they know, you know, because there's deaths that occur in the hospital, but there's plenty of deaths that occur out of the hospital as well. And how can we look at that unique approach to team together with our hospitals, our patients, and our families in the community with our organization and the hospital bases just here in town in Maricopa County to improve how we actually provide grief support moving forward? So we're looking at some research opportunities. We've teamed together not only with our organization, but also with the hospital systems here in town and also with Midwestern University to look at some research opportunities there on grief support, because again, there's not a whole lot out there from a grief perspective when you look at research, and we know that it's important.
Well, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is something that everyone will go through at some point in their lives. And for those that aren't directly affected, whether it's distant family, friends, or coworkers, it can be difficult to know what to say to someone who has just lost a loved one. So what advice would you give someone in that situation?
Death is a hard word to say a lot of times. When someone's had a death in their life, it is scary. It is an opportunity, though, for people to understand that it's okay. Death is part of the human lifespan, and we all have births and we all have deaths. And when we've experienced a death in our life, there is opportunity, though, for support, and to shut down and not look for opportunities for support can be difficult and sometimes can be somewhat harmful. I see patients oftentimes that come into the emergency department with medical complaints, chronic abdominal pain and a variety of other type of medical complaints that can sometimes and many times be directly related to a recent death in their life. And they just didn't realize that it's been the stress of that death that's now causing some medical complaints as well. And so we see some opportunities to be able to say to these families that it is okay to feel the way they're feeling, and we have some opportunities to provide support, whether it's a camp program, whether it's a support group, or whether it's just information that our organization can provide to help families better cope and better understand how to move through this process.
I think we've come up with this, I'll call it a cliche, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. It's better than saying some of the other things that people have said. Like one of the questions I always used to get was, well, how old was your father? Inferring that because he was old when he died, that I shouldn't be grieving. Mm-hmm. And so I just came up with my own little response to that to kind of shut that down. But I think when people get uncomfortable about going to a funeral, they don't know what to say. You can just simply touch the person on their hand and say, I'm sorry, or my sympathies. Just something simple, just that caring voice or I'm here for you is comforting. And then on the other side, when somebody says, you know, if there's anything I can do, if you're going to say that, then follow up with it. And then from the person that is in the grief process, then ask for help.
Yeah.
You know, not be afraid to ask for help. We so protect ourselves and we so are afraid. And one of the things that I hear in the camp all the time is kids will say, I don't cry, but I found out at camp it's okay to cry. And so we'll say to that child, you know, well, did someone tell you that it's not okay to cry? Well, no, but when I cry, it makes my mom sad. And so then we'll go on the other side of camp and we'll say, you know, some of the kids are concerned that when they cry, it makes the adults sad, so they don't cry. And the adults will say, well, I don't cry in front of the kids because I don't want to make them sad. Mm. So each one is protecting the other person, and so nobody gets the honest feeling.
Remembering is also important, and at times there are certain children and sometimes adults too that feel like after a death in their life they won't remember who it was, or they may forget who that person was, whatever the issues may be. And we try to allow the process of remembrance, not only at camp, how are we remembering who it was who died, but what kind of opportunities are we providing for them? So if we end up having a song that we play at camp that's specific to that weekend camp, they can go home, they've lit a candle on Saturday night at camp, that candle goes home with them, and maybe on a special anniversary or birthday or a holiday or even just a special day, they can light that candle, maybe play the song that we played at camp, and remember who it was who died in their life. They can do it as a family, they can do it individually. But what it's truly doing is providing that support for that individual. That's, I think, what's important, and that's, I think, what we do best, is we provide avenues and opportunities for these children and adults to move through this process of grief easier.
Mm-hmm. And that safe space for them to express themselves.
Exactly.
Wherever it is in the process that they are. Before we wrap up, I know there's so much that we could cover on this topic alone, but is there anything I haven't asked or that we haven't touched on that you feel is important to address?
We're always, as Diane mentioned earlier, we're always looking out for volunteers. And our camps are really supported by volunteers in the community, both young and older. And I think we have a very unique group of dedicated and passionate volunteers that we've developed over the years, but we're always looking for more. And so if there's individuals out there that have that opportunity where they have the time, they have the interest, and most importantly, the passion of supporting children and adults through the grieving process, we're here and we would love to hear from them.
I guess I would add one more thing. The only requirement of a volunteer is that they have had a death loss that they have experienced themselves.
And do you have donation opportunities? Because you did mention earlier scholarships. I imagine maybe donations helped with that?
Absolutely, because we, you know, Dr. Finch mentioned that the fee, the donation fee is $50 a camper. It actually costs us $350 per camper to go. And so we do fundraising, and we've got a casino night coming up in October, and our annual gala will be on November 23rd. And so there's fundraisers, but there's also donation. There's a donation bar on our website that you can donate, and you can donate in honor of someone or in memory of someone, and we do our best to post that and have a place to honor those people. So we welcome donations at any time, in any amounts.
We've had the opportunity as well to support, from an organizational perspective, individuals that have come from businesses. We all have jobs, we all work, and we all have opportunities to support organizations many times through our own businesses. And we've had some previous campers come to camp and then go back to their organization or their business and not only explain how much the organization meant to them, but what can businesses do to help support our organization. And I can tell you that we have camp sponsorships that are available for businesses that may be willing and interested in supporting a camp. And that's a great way to not only support our weekend camp programs, but also as a business, we can actually help support them as well from a PR perspective.
Give me the website address again where people could find out more about all of this.
Steppingstonesofhope.org.
Dr. Finch and Diane Radin of Stepping Stones of Hope, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much for
Thanks
the opportunity.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, appreciate it.
My next guest is Carl Gentles. He is the executive director of the Back to School Clothing Drive. And I can't believe we're talking about back to school already. I'm sure the kids are excited about it.
Yep.
Summer vacation's going by way too fast. All right. So tell me, first of all, what the Back to School Clothing Drive is. It's an actual organization, right? It's not just a drive.
That is correct. Back to School Clothing Drive is celebrating its 52nd year. We are an Arizona nonprofit that provides new school uniforms and outfits, backpacks, and school supplies to children in need. So we focus on elementary school, K through 6th grade students, primarily kids that go to Title I schools, basically, which are schools in low-income communities. Mm-hmm. So that's our primary focus.
How far out in Arizona do you reach?
Well, we're in Maricopa County primarily. We do help some schools in northern Arizona, in the Kingman area, Bullhead City, Kingman area. So that is through our partnership with the BHHS Legacy Foundation, which is one of our primary benefactors. And so there are several schools up there that we benefit as well as a result of the work that we do.
So you're collecting, I'm assuming, all year, because you can't just prepare for this a month before school starts again.
Yeah, that's a great question. We do. The summer event, which is actually the culmination of a program, is our main program at the Back to School Clothing Drive. We have three programs. The one that we're most well known for is the summer distribution event. And it takes us about 9 months of the year to prepare for that event. And of course, at that event, over 5,000 students, K through 6th grade students, receive school uniforms and outfits and all kinds of school supplies to get them ready for school. But that takes a lot of work. We're raising money all year for mm-hmm. that event. So we raised, you know, several hundred thousand dollars for that event to make it possible to give out these uniforms and school supplies for his kids at the event during the summer.
So you purchase the uniforms and the backpacks, or do you take donations, or is it both?
Yeah, another great question. You're good at this.
done this before.
we raise money. So we receive corporate and foundation and individual donations all year round. So we're writing grants all year. We're doing events, et cetera, to raise money to buy the clothes and the school uniforms and the school supplies and the sneakers and the backpacks that we give out to the kids. So everything that the child receives when they come to our program is brand new. And we do that intentionally. And that, I think, is one of the things that separates us from a number of other organizations that do similar things, which is we don't give out used clothes or gently used or slightly used or donated clothing. We actually buy the clothes. And look, if my child or your child will wear it, that's what the kid will get at the back to school clothing drive event. So I literally over the years have run our new products through my son and said, will you wear this? And he says, absolutely, that's a good deal. And so the kid in our program gets it.
Well, the other great thing about that is consistency, too. So one kid isn't walking out with something better. You're, making sure that everything is equal there.
That is exactly right. And that is one of the underlying premises of our program, which is we are helping children, school students, or students get ready to go back to school and ready to learn without the distractions of what they're wearing or the kind of things that they've got to with them. So when they come to us, they get a uniform, they get socks, they get underwear, they get sneakers, they get polo shirts, all of the things that you need when you go back to school. And everybody that comes through our program gets the same thing. And we already know because of our relationship with the schools what the kids need, the exact uniform colors and shorts, the styles, all of that. And so that's what the kid gets, because our belief is that if we eliminate those barriers, those fundamental barriers to early childhood school success, they will become successful and help them. We will help them become successful as a result of doing so.
When is the summer distribution event?
Sure. So the distribution event takes place July 22nd through the 25th of this year. It's at Grand Canyon University. Now, I should mention that our program is by pre-registration, and it's done through the school districts and schools. And so if anybody listening today has a child that wants to participate, they would need to contact their elementary school directly and ask them if they are a member of the Back to School Clothing Drive and if there are still available slots for their kid to participate in the summer program. So if they come directly down to Grand Canyon, it's a closed program, so they wouldn't be able to just show up and then receive items. They'd have to go through their school, get registered through their school to participate in the program.
How many kids do you usually have at the event?
Yeah, each year we serve 5,000 kids. And 5,000. So it's K through 6, 5,000 kids. So some years we do more, some years we do less, but it's primarily about 5,000. And so we know, because we've been doing this quite a long time, that we can only serve about 5,000 kids during that one event, during that week in July. So what we've done is we have worked out partnerships with a couple of other venues to do two additional events this year. One is at Sequoia Elementary School, which is wonderful. It's in the East Valley. Sequoia is a great school located in Mesa. So we'll have an event out there in early August that will help about 750 kids. And then a new event that we're doing this year, which we're very excited about, is an event on Luke Air Force Base. And that's to help members of the military and their families who still need help with the basics of school supplies and uniforms and those things to help their kids. And so we'll do an event at the end of July at Luke Air Force Base as well. And we're exceptionally proud and happy to do those. So we are now we've expanded our primary program from the 5,000 kids that we do during the week-long event, which is our primary delivery. And now we do one in the West Valley with Luke Air Force Base, and then one in the East Valley with Sequoia Elementary. And again, all of these are pre-register. Mm-hmm. You have to get a hold of your school, and you register through your school, and that's the way you participate.
So when the kids walk out of there, they have a backpack, they have a uniform, they have a bunch of other stuff. What is the value of what they're getting, what they're walking away with?
Yeah, we're very proud of this. this. We've worked hard to increase the value over the years for that child. So the child walks away with about $350 to $400 worth of clothing and school supplies. And so if you think about this, when you're getting prepared, when you're as a parent getting your child prepared to go back to school, that initial investment of $350 to $400 includes their polos, their shirts, their shorts, their socks, their underwear, their belt, their sneakers, which is an exceptionally important thing for the child, the backpack, and then all the contents within that backpack, which are, of course, your pencils, your paper, all of those things. And then in addition to that, we have a group of ladies that sew all year round for us, that sew accessory items. So they make skinny scarves, they make all kinds of things. They make dresses, they make beanie hats, anything that you can think of that's just a neat, fun kind of accessory item. They work all year round. They make those items, and that also gets given, that's also provided to the kids. They get to select those items, which really kind of, as we said, accessorizes what they get. It's a lot of fun. And so if you've ever seen a child walk out of a gym in 112 degree heat with a beanie on, you'll know that's a valuable item. So it's really fun.
Well, what's great about it is you think about $400 per kid. I mean, you know, most of these families probably don't have just one kid.
That's right.
They might have two or three kids in the family. That can really put a household behind.
It does. And so, you know, part of the premise of our program is to help the family sustain their life. So if you have a family of three or four kids, and many times we have siblings that come through from the same school, they come through, they got three or four kids. So then you do the math, like you said, it adds up very quickly to close to $1,500. And I think a recent National Federation of Retailers survey, I believe, said that families are spending on average per child about $700 per child to get them ready to go back to school. So,
and this is just to get them ready for the beginning of the school year. I mean, this isn't going to last throughout the year.
That's exactly right. And so that first investment of that $600-$700 is really important. And then, of course, those polo shirts and those shorts and all the items don't last all year. So then the question is, what happens? So our answer to that is we have a second program that we've been operating for over 10 years, which is our student attire for education. So we sell school uniforms to those same schools so that they can stock a clothing closet, on-site clothing closet, with the same kind of uniforms and items that the kid gets during the summer, so that during the year when the child has an accident or the shirt wears out or the parents just don't have the resources to appropriately clothe the child, the school resource officer the school nurse or whomever at the school can go into that clothing closet, which they've purchased all those items from back to school clothing drive, and take that item, give it to the child, and the child has what they need. So we've been doing that for about 10 years. It's a wonderful program. And if I can mention that we are about to expand that program to a new program that's going to sell school uniforms to the general public on a buy one, give one basis, and all your give ones will support our summer distribution event. So we're announcing and launching that program later on this month. We're very excited about it. Think Tom's Shoes, the same concept as Tom's Shoes. We are just doing it with school uniforms, and the beneficiary are those same kids that go to the distribution event over the summer. So we're really excited about it.
My guest this morning is Carl Gentles. He is the executive director of the Back to School Clothing Drive. Tell me about the distribution event that happens and how, you know, not only what a difference it makes for the kids, because now they don't have to worry about what they're wearing when they go into school on that first day. You know, this is when you show off, you know, it's your first impression. So this is a huge deal for them, but it's also for the parents, because this really lifts a weight off their shoulders, I'm sure.
It does. And we like to say that we are breaking down barriers to early childhood school success. And we do that by providing new school uniforms and outfits, backpacks, and school supplies. And when you think about it, as a parent, I'm a parent. I have a young adult now. But when they're going back to school, it costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of money, and you're, in many cases, having to make, in some families, they're having to make the choice between buying those school uniforms and maybe paying the gas bill or paying, you know, putting money into a savings account, or they're having to pay rent. And so this small effort by our organization that's been going on for 50 years really does help the sustainability of families, because it allows them to do something else with the money that they may need to sustain their families on a monthly basis. And that's really important. I think that's a fundamental thing that I'd like people to know about our organization, is we are in the business of helping sustain families through the provision of these school uniforms.
Tell me about donation and volunteer opportunities that you have.
Sure. So as I mentioned, everything we do for these kids is all, we provide everything brand new to them. So we're raising money all year round. Mm-hmm. So if people have a passion for children, a passion for education, want to help kids succeed, they certainly can do so through our website at backtoschoolclothingdrive.com. And we are forever grateful for whatever amount of donation that people can give. People give on a monthly basis, so we call those sustaining members, just like you'd give to your PBS station or somebody, something else, or your church or something else like that. So we have a number of those folks. We also are heavily funded by corporate and foundation donors. And if I could mention a couple of them, because they are very important to us and they help us deliver the items to our beneficiary, our students. And those are, first of all, we have to mention the BHHS Legacy Foundation. And they are our primary benefactor. And in fact, this program during the summer, the distribution event, is basically their program that we execute for them. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing that. It's called the Backpack Buddies Program. And that is the foundation of Back to School Clothing Drive. So they provide a significant amount of funding to underwrite the summer distribution event. Bank of America is another major sponsor of that event, which it would have been for many years, and we can't do it without them, and we thank them. Discover Card is a new sponsor for us, which they also have come in and sponsored a day at distribution, just like Bank of America. Fiesta Bowl, CBS5 is a sponsor, and of course, the event is held at Grand Canyon University, and they've been phenomenal partners for us. And we, of course, host the event there. And I should mention, the reason why we wanted to host the event there, we had the event at Phoenix Prep Academy for many, many years, 18, 19 years. And we finally ended up moving the event to Grand Canyon because we wanted these students to have some exposure to higher education, to see what's possible, to see themselves on a campus, on a university campus. And we think that is just a wonderful intrinsic value of being a partner with Grand Canyon. And it could be Grand Canyon, or it could be Arizona State, or whomever else. But we wanted these kids to have this experience of being on a college campus, because we wanted to have them see themselves on campus and achieving and potentially going to school at a college or university in the future. Now, I will mention also, you asked about volunteers. We can't do this event without our volunteers. It's a major operation. On staff, we only have two people. And then we have about four part-time staffers. But it really does work on volunteer support. And so, and volunteers we take all day long. So if you're an organization, a company, or an individual that wants to volunteer for the summer event, all you do is go onto our website, to our volunteer section, and you let you type in your information that you want to volunteer. You can register as an individual. If you're a company that's volunteered and you know that your company has volunteered at our event in the past, you can go on and find your company name by the drop down and register to volunteer. Now, if you're a brand new company, you're hearing this for the first time going, man, we want to get out there and do that as well. We want to organize 15, 20 people to come down on a given day. Then you can call our office or send us an email, and you can get that information on our website, and we'll get you set up to have you come down and volunteer for the event.
This would be a great group project, and I know a lot of businesses like doing those together for getting their team together. What is the website address, though?
It is backtoschoolclothingdrive.com, all one word.
And do you have, are some of these opportunities before the actual summer distribution event to get everything together and prepared?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. We're very proud of a program that we started a couple years ago. It's a corporate backpack stuffing event. So we figured out that we have a number of companies that want to volunteer for an event, but they can't, their employees can't leave the corporate site to come down to Grand Canyon and participate in the event. So what we did was we took part of our operation to them, and so we do backpack stuffing events on corporate campuses. And those companies, we schedule a date. They schedule 50, 60, however many volunteers for that day. They do this this corporate volunteer activity on their campus without having to leave their area. And these companies will stuff anywhere between 1,000 and 3,000 backpacks. They'll stuff school supply pouches. They'll stuff hygiene kits, everything in preparation for the summer event in July. So leading up to today, we've had 10 corporate backpack stuffing events to date for this year, which has been wonderful. And I'll mention a couple of them so that people out there that hear this can say, yeah, we can do the same thing in our company. Yeah. We just did one with Discover Financial, did about 1,000 backpacks there. Holder Construction, we did another number of backpacks. I think we did about 700 or 800 backpacks there. We also did one with Mass Mutual for the very first year. And let's see, DoorDash, you know, the guys that bring your food to you directly. We did one with them, Guardian Life Insurance. We started all this with Western Digital, which is a technology company in Chandler who approached us and said, hey, we're looking for a volunteer activity. We heard about your event. Is there any way that you guys might be able to do something ahead of time on our campus? And that's how this all started about 5 years ago. So it's a great opportunity. And then what happens as a result of that is the company that we host the event with, they'll decide, they make a determination on a donation to our organization, which helps us offset the expense of the backpacks and school supplies. And so it varies in terms of the amount that companies will donate to the organization as a result of our volunteer effort. And we just appreciate the opportunity. And so it's a lot of fun. Now, if you want more information on that, you can go to our website and you'll see on there, there's a drop-down menu that says corporate backpack stuffing events. And it's a great volunteer opportunity for your employees.
Carl Gentles is my guest this morning. He is the executive director of the Back to School Clothing Drive. Give me the website address again.
backtoschoolclothingdrive.com.
I want to make sure that gets in there a couple of times.
Sure.
So last year when you were in, there was a big event that you were a beneficiary of. How did that go?
Yeah, it went really...
I'm sure that
really
prepped you well for where you are now.
It really did. I'm very proud of this event. It is called the Fantastical Festival. Formerly the Phoenix Children's Festival, we rebranded it. It's now called the Phoenix FAM, F-A-M, Tastical Festival. So we wanted this event to be more family-focused for all ages of the family. It will be this year on September 28th in downtown Phoenix. The first year in 2017, there were 2,500 people that attended. Last year, 20,000 people attended.
Wow.
And it just blew the whole top off of downtown Phoenix. It was unbelievable. We were just thrilled to see, of course, downtown Phoenix being activated in that respect. I know downtown Phoenix wants to bring families into downtown, and there's so much going on down there. And I should mention that Downtown Phoenix Inc. is a major partner of the Fantastical Festival, and we appreciate them. They've been immense supporters, and a number of others, including Cityscape, where we've held the event in the last couple of years. It got so big that we now had to move it just west, just outside of Cityscape, just west down the street on Washington. And so we're expecting well over 20,000 people this year again. We will be announcing officially, I guess I can announce it now, that we will have Paw Patrol as our special guest. And all the kids love Paw Patrol, including my grandson. So I'm a rock star right now around my household because my grandson's going to get to meet Paw Patrol. But Paw Patrol will be there. Bubble Maniacs will be there, which is another great thing. We're going to have the Slime group out there. The Dino Crew will be there as well as Main Stage Entertainment and an awful lot of things going on. And so a number of good sponsors as well. AAA is a major sponsor. AAA Arizona, we appreciate them. Coyotes are coming back, and a number of other big sponsors will be there. So we are very excited. We'll be announcing ticket prices and all that actually later on this week. So stay tuned to that. The website for that event is FAMTASTICALFestival.com. famtastical.com.
And that's fam like family.
Right. Famtastical. So Famtastical is going to be a fantastical fun event. And that's at famtasticalfestival.com. And, of course, we have sponsorship and vendor opportunities available for that as well. The beneficiary of that event is the Back to School Clothing Drive. So everything goes back to benefit Back to School Clothing Drive. And that's how committed we are to this organization.
So I'm sure that in the time that this has been happening, it's been years, maybe over 20 years that the Back to School Clothing Drive has been going on. Mm-hmm. Do you have any success stories that you can share? And I'm not sure how long you've been with the organization, but have you seen these kids grow up and just what a difference you've made?
Yeah, you just gave me goosebumps. It's every year there's a new story, a new highlight, something that says, this is why I do this. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, a child was being interviewed by, I think it was CBS 5, and he just lit up. He said, I cannot believe what's going on here. This is so wonderful. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for doing this for us. And I tell you what, that alone just makes you, it makes you understand why you're doing this, because these kids are absolutely kids that truly need it and truly appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Many kids say to us that this is the very first time they've ever had a brand new pair of sneakers. Think about that for a minute. A couple years ago, I replaced the same shoes that we put on a child the year before with brand new sneakers because the sole of his shoes, or he had, no, not sole, so he had grown out of his shoes. Mm. We've had other kids that walk in there and those shoes, you wouldn't believe, the sneakers, you wouldn't believe that they're wearing them, and we put on a brand new pair of sneakers, they walk out of there with the sneakers on. They refuse to put it in the backpack, they put it on, and they walk out of there. We give away books, so kids will have 3 to 5 or so books that they walk away with, depending on the year. Some of these kids have never had their own books. So this is what we're talking about. We're talking about kids that, you know, truly, and these are things we take for granted as parents because, you know, we are fortunate enough to be able to afford these things for our kids. But a lot of families in the Valley just can't afford these things. They're luxury and they're not necessity items. So they get them as they get them, or sometimes don't get them at all. And so that's what we're most proud of. We're most proud of what we're able to deliver directly to the child and allowing that child to see, you know, somebody out here is really caring for them. Their families don't have a lot, but this community will rally around and come to their aid, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah. You know, I think back, and of course, this was a long time ago, but when I was a kid, you know, going back to school, if I didn't have a new pair of shoes or a new dress or new something different from the year before, it would be very distracting.
Right. It kind of freaks you out, doesn't
it? Yeah. You walk into school and everybody else is excited with new stuff, and, you know, if you're the only one that's not, it could really affect the rest of the year. It could set the tone for you.
It does. You think about that. I'll let that sink in there for a minute with your child as you're listening to this, because that is real. That is a reality that children face, right? Because this self-perception, self-confidence, self-esteem issue with kids in elementary school is a big, big deal. And so we've got to allow them to play ball like the rest of the kids, right? And so that's what we do. I will tell you that in terms of volunteers, a lot of people volunteer with us because they were that kid, and they know what that feels like. We have countless stories of volunteers that tell us, you know, Carl, I used to be that child, and I know what this is like. We have board members that used to be that child, and that's why they're members of our board and members of our organization. We have donors that say the exact same thing. So we are really meeting direct, fundamental needs of families and kids, and that's what we're most proud of.
So the summer distribution event is going on at GCU on July 22nd. Again, you can't just show up. You have to contact your school, right?
Right. It's July 22nd through the 25th. It's by pre-registration. And if you are listening and you want your child to participate, contact your elementary school. Find out if they are part of the Back to School Clothing Drive, and if so, get registered to participate.
And you said you do have 2 other events as well. Do you have plans to expand even more, even further?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We would love to expand because the more kids we can help, the better. We know that there are almost 400,000 kids on any given year living in poverty here in Arizona, okay, elementary school age kids. And so we know it's a major issue. So the more we can do, the better. And so, of course, the more we do is all dependent on funding. And so as we grow as an organization, as our funding levels increase, and we are able to support and help more kids.
Before we wrap up, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to share with the public?
Well, I would just say thank you, number one, to the public for your years of support for Back to School Clothing Drive and now for the Fantastical Festival. They're both working together to support children in need, and we really appreciate that. If you are interested in supporting our organization, you can contact us at through our website at backtoschoolclothingdrive.com. If you're a volunteer that really wants to give back to this community, same, go to our website and get in touch with us. And if you're a corporate or foundation representative and you want to host an event at your company site, a backpack stuffing event, by all means, we are expanding that program rapidly. In fact, we have a waiting list now for next year. So we want to get you on the list so we can do that next year as well. So, and we'll actually start the backpack stuffing events in September on campuses. So you want to get a hold of us now so we can get you scheduled in.
I know this is the time of year when people start thinking about the back to school drive, but I hope that people will consider this is something that's going on all year long.
Yeah.
There's always something going on behind the scenes.
There is. And remember, schools are in session for each quarter or session, and then they start up again. And so at the startup of every new quarter for the school, kids need uniforms, kids need school supplies. And that's where we come in.
Carl Gentles is the executive director of the Back to School Clothing Drive. Thank you again for coming in today.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
And thank you also for joining us for Sunday Sunrise, a public affairs show produced locally by Intercom Phoenix. I'm Minnie Salas, your host. Have a great Sunday.